Yeah, I understand you've got a series on the Pali Canon at the moment. I just happened to find a sutta by chance, basically, which I thought was very interesting on the topic of ethics. It's not a well-known sutta. It doesn't sort of belong to the standard FWO canon of suttas. Yeah? But it's just worthwhile looking into the Pali Canon for other teachings and other texts than the ones we usually use in the movement. I found the text as a reference on the question of whether one still is ethical at enlightenment, the question of enlightenment and ethics. Yeah. There's a reference to that in a book by a German monk, Analayo, who wrote a very good book on mindfulness, and he refers to that sutta. The sutta is in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length sayings, that's where the M, it's number 78. Yeah. It's easier to remember than the name, actually. So what happens in the sutta, sort of a story, or the setting, a non-Buddhist wanderer, Ugahamana, his full name is Ugahamana Samandak Mundika Putta, which means Ugahamana, the son of the wanderer Mundika. It's his full name. So you can't forget this name now. He's always called Ugahamana, actually. It's his first name. So Ugahamana, with a large followers, with lots of followers, is staying in a park. Just staying there. And a lay follower of the Buddha, the carpenter Panchakanga, thought of visiting the Buddha. And as often in these texts, this is sort of stock beginnings, basically, it's too early to see the Buddha. It's not the time yet. So he thought, why not visit Ugahamana and see what he has to say. So the text begins with Panchakanga approaching Ugahamana and his followers, and it described as follows. Let us quote. So Ugahamana and a large assembly of wanderers were making an uproar loudly and noisily, talking many things of pointless talk, such as talk of kings, robbers, ministers, armies, dangers, battles, food, drink, clothing, beds, garlands, perfumes, relatives, vehicles, villages, towns, cities, countries, women, heroes, streets, wealth, the dead, trifles, the origin of the world, the origin of the sea, whether things are so or are not so. It's a common beginning of a sutta, actually. The wanderer Ugahamana saw the carpenter Panchakanga coming in the distance. Seeing him, he quieted his own assembly thus, "Sirs, be quiet. Sirs, make no noise. Here comes the carpenter Panchakanga, a disciple of the recluse Gotama, the Buddha, one of the Buddha's white-clothed lay disciples staying at Sarvati. These venerable ones like quiet. They are disciplined and quiet. They commend quiet. Perhaps if he finds our assembly a quiet one, he will sing to join us." Then the wanderers become quiet. It's a very common beginning of a sutta, actually. So it comes up again and again. So it's easy to just overlook it. But because it's repeated so often, it probably means something. The followers of the Buddha are almost defined as loving quiet. Yeah? And usually some follower of the Buddha comes along and these other wanderers are engaged in this kind of talk, and then they all become very embarrassed of themselves and shut up. I mean, seeing this sort of long list of things they talk about, it reminds you of some sort of retreat after dinner conversations or order meetings, dare I say. I was reminded of some situation in the movement which I know very well. Yeah? Sort of debates one has on retreats in the afternoon. Actually, the literal word for pointless talk is animal talk. And animals are sort of horizontal, they go on all fours. It's talk which doesn't lead anywhere. It's pointless talk, it's animal talk. It's a horizontal talk. And what sort of happens when you're sort of engaged in this sort of conversation, one sort of knows that it's not right. And then somebody enters whom one respects, and one feels slightly embarrassed. Yeah? And it's something you try to change the topic somehow. There's no situation. Yeah? This is sort of conversation with friends on retreat, say, yeah? And some sort of senior order member comes in who you respect, who is well known for his sort of proper speech, and you start feeling slightly sort of without losing face, you try to change the topic somehow. Yeah? That's sort of situation. Actually, I know it from the other side, I know it from both sides. It happened once to me when I was in Padma Loka on a retreat, not a Going for Refuge retreat, fortunately, but I sort of entered the lounge. And as soon as I entered, the conversation was quiet. Isn't that interesting? Yeah? And I thought it's probably a good thing that I have this effect. It probably means that I act as a sort of moral implication for people. And the Buddha has a lot to say about pointless talk. It's our list of topics. Interesting is, it's not just about avoiding useless speech. He gives a list of concrete topics. Now, all of these things can be talked about in a useful way or in a meaningless way. But certain topics lend themselves to meaningless talk, which are, the kings, ministers, and so on. So the state of society, politics, and the government. Food and drink, yeah? Diets. And philosophical ideas. Yeah? And so for some of them, are very tempting to just go into really pointless talk, sort of empty debating, yeah? Often showing one how clever one is, basically. Yeah, I know I can get into a sort of self-righteous state talking about these sort of things, yeah? Showing my cleverness off. And talking about philosophical ideas, one can get sort of, I can do it, and some people can, intoxicated with sort of clever ideas about philosophy. And it sort of loses its sort of meaning after a while. Even talking about Buddhism can become this sort of intoxication. You lose touch with what's important. You just talk about ideas and lose touch with the actual meaning of it, the actual meaningfulness. So it could be quite useful to think in terms of right speech. We'll try to speak meaningful, not so much in the general principle of avoiding meaningless speech, but finding out one's own topics whereby it is in danger of falling into meaningless talk. And just avoid the topic. It actually works. I did this when on my ordination here in Guhya Loka. Being on retreat in Guhya Loka, there's not much to distract oneself apart from the kitchen. And I noticed I was getting into the slightly moaning, nagging, talking about the kitchen, like food will be late, I wonder what we're having today, so-and-so has cooked, which means all the washing up has to be done, sort of thing. Yeah? Sort of thing one says, it's remarks to one's friends. Yeah? And at one point I realized it's just a waste of energy to say these things. It doesn't make it better. Yeah? So I just took this sort of precept not to mention the kitchen at all. And the effect was amazing. My energy level was much higher. I was much happier, actually, not moaning. Yeah, so that was the introduction to the sutta itself, the setting. Yeah. And as I said, it's quite interesting that the Buddhist followers, the Sangha, was defined as being those who love silence. When they embarrass everybody else, then usually. So Panchakanga went to Ugahamana, this teacher. They exchanged polite greetings, what you usually do in the Pali Canon. And then Ugahamana gives a teaching. It doesn't say whether he asked him for a teaching, he just comes out with his teaching. And he describes to Panchakanga his view of the enlightened person, of the one who reached his goal, reached the highest goal. And he says, the one who has reached the highest goal in the spiritual life has four qualities, which are, he does no evil bodily actions. He utters no evil speech. He has no evil intentions. And he does not make his living by any evil livelihood. Yeah. So that's his definition of the enlightened person, of the highest spiritual goal. Yeah? No evil bodily deeds, so no unethical action, no unethical speech, no unethical livelihood, and no wrong intentions. Sounds very good. Panchakanga neither agrees nor disagrees, probably in the line of all this pointless debating going on before. It just doesn't get into a discussion about it. Yeah. He just leaves and sees the Buddha and asks the Buddha about it. And I'm going to read the reply of the Buddha. So he asks him, is it true that the highest goal is described in no evil actions, no evil speech, no wrong livelihood, no wrong intention. And the Buddha said, if that were so, carpenter, then a young tender infant lying prone is accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, an ascetic invincible attained to the supreme attainment, according to the Wanderer Ugahamana statement. Young tender infant, another translator calls a stupid baby boy, but I better use this translation to upset parents. For a young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion body. So how should he do an evil bodily action beyond mere wriggling? A young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion speech. So how should he utter evil speech beyond mere whining? A young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion intention. So how should he have evil intentions beyond mere sulking? A young tender infant lying prone does not even have the notion livelihood. So how should he make his living by evil livelihood beyond being suckled at his mother's breast? If that were so, carpenter, then a young tender infant lying prone is accomplished in what is wholesome, according to the wondrous Ugahamana statement. So basically what the Buddha says is, just avoiding evil action isn't good enough. Yeah? Just avoiding bad actions is just not better than a sort of the tender infant who's incapable of doing anything anyway. Yeah? Which is quite interesting, because sometimes there's a tendency to simplify Buddhism and spiritual life. Sometimes an attempt to put Buddhism into one word. Often it's mindfulness or something like that. But there's also the tendency in some circles to reduce Buddhism to ethics. And the sort of statement that somebody is a good Buddhist just because they're ethical. Yeah? But that's certainly not what the Buddha thinks. Yeah? And just sort of avoiding trouble doesn't mean that one is spiritually developed at all. It's a good thing not to do any evil bodily and verbal actions, but it's probably not good enough for the Buddha. Also, I'm sure this passage pointed out that the Buddha had humor and irony. It couldn't be serious when he said it. So what the Buddha then says to the Panchakanga, it is 10 qualities which make one an enlightened being. So these 4 are 10 qualities. But before coming to this 10, here come in the end of the text, first something has to be understood. Yeah, so he says, okay, it's not these 4 qualities, it's actually 10 qualities which describe the enlightened person. Yeah, and I come to them at the end of the sutta. But before we come onto them, what the Buddha does, and that's the main part of the sutta, gives a really detailed examination of ethics. Very deep examination of what ethics is about. He does it in a very interesting way. He looks at unwholesome actions, unethical actions, at ethical actions, at unethical or unwholesome intentions. I'm going to say later what intentions are, and wholesome intentions. So those are 4 things. Yeah? And he looks at them with the help of the formula of the 4 noble truths. When one reads this, it looks very complicated, but the structure is quite simple, actually. So we know the 4 noble truths applied to suffering, dukkha. Yeah, so just in case you don't remember the 4 noble truths, just first noble truth is suffering, second, its origin, which is craving, third, its cessation, enlightenment or nirvana, fourth, the path to the cessation. Yeah. So that's the basic formula. The formula is, one, something exists, second, it has a cause, or conditions, third, it ceases, fourth, the way leading to its cessation. Just a standard formula. And he applies this formula to ethical or unethical action or intention. So first of all, unwholesome habits or unwholesome actions, unethical actions. So first, what are unethical actions? There are unwholesome bodily actions, unwholesome verbal actions, unwholesome livelihood. So very basic, straightforward. Yeah. So that's unwholesome action. Their source, their cause, that's an important point. So the question is, where do they come from? Why do we act unethical, basically? Yeah. And the cause is the mind. Yeah. Especially greed, hatred, and delusion. The basic Buddhist teachings which you all have learned about in beginner's courses, basically. Yeah? So it's greed, hatred, and delusion, which are the cause for unethical action. Their cessation is, cessation of unwholesome actions is when one abandons unwholesome actions and practices wholesome actions. Mm-hmm. And compare that with Ugahamana's statement, it's just about abandoning the unwholesome. But the Buddha says, do something wholesome as well. Yeah, so in a sense, there are positive precepts in it. And how to do this? The path before this, the first noble truth in the sense, or the first thing, what are unwholesome habits? Described. Second, their cause, which is the mind, especially greed, hatred, and delusion. Third, their cessation, is ethical action. And I'm going to read, because it's a very, very interesting and very good quote, I find, how to do this. It's the fourth noble, the way to the cessation of unwholesome actions. Like, how to do it. And how practicing does he practice the way to the cessation of unwholesome habits? Here a bhikkhu, a practitioner, awakens zeal for the non-arising of unarisen evil unwholesome states, and he makes effort, arouses energy, exerts his mind, and strives. He awakens zeal for the abandoning of arisen evil unwholesome states. I'm going to sort of organize it afterwards, don't worry. He awakens zeal for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. He awakens zeal for the continuance, non-disappearance, strengthening, increase, and fulfillment by development of arisen wholesome states. And he makes effort, arouses energy, exerts his mind, and strives. These are the four right efforts, which are preventing unarisen, unwholesome states. So, yeah, eradicating arisen, unwholesome states. Yeah, so when you're in unwholesome states, do something about it, get rid of it. Developing unarisen wholesome states. So if you feel grumpy, do the metta bhavana and develop metta. If no metta is there, develop it. Maintain arisen wholesome states. If there's metta, don't let go, just keep at it. Yeah? These are the four right efforts. And it's a very strong language. He uses the word desire. Chanda is the word desire. You desire wholesome states, basically. That's the way to do it. So if you just look at this first bit, the main points for me are, ethics is not just about doing or not doing certain things, but understanding why. Yeah? Understanding one's own motivation behind an unethical action. Yeah? Just sort of avoiding evil action is a good thing. Yeah? But really one has to go to the root of evil action and see why. What's the motivation behind it? Yeah? It's greed, hatred, delusion. Then it also means taking responsibility for it. The cause is one's own mind. It's not other people making us act unethical. It's always the own mind. Then there's the importance of what we would call the positive precepts. It's of doing positive ethical action. And the strong emphasis on effort. Yeah? Effort, desire, striving for the good. Which, again, goes far beyond Ugahamana's very simple statement. Yeah? It goes far broader, far deeper than that. According to the commentary, this first lot, if you manage this completely, you're a stream entrant. Yeah? You can't fall back on the spiritual path. This being sort of completed. Yeah? Second, wholesome or ethical or skillful habits or actions. Yeah? That was the first lot, unethical action. Yeah? Had a look at that, the formula of the Four Noble Truths. Second, ethical action. There are wholesome bodily action, wholesome verbal action, right livelihood. Clear enough. The cause is the mind, a mind unaffected by greed, hatred, and delusion. So far it's straightforward. And now the cessation. The cessation means one is virtuous but does not identify with virtue. So the cessation of ethical action is one is virtuous, ethical, but doesn't identify with it. This describes the ethical action of the enlightened one, according to commentary. Yeah. And by the way, the fourth one is again the four right efforts. Yeah, that's how to do it, effort, striving, discipline, craving for the good, desiring the good. So what does it mean to be virtuous or ethical but does not identifying with it? there sometimes a view around that at enlightenment one is beyond good and evil. Yeah. Also, there's this thing about being non, sort of, something wrong with dualisms, apparently. The Buddha didn't care about dualism, I think. But this view around dualism is wrong. Good and evil is a dualism, so one has to get rid of it. Yeah? That doesn't seem to be the case. There's nothing wrong with this. It's actually of vital importance to be able to distinguish between good and evil. Yeah? What it means is that the enlightened one is by his nature ethical. He cannot do certain things. He's incapable by his nature of being unethical. Yeah? So whereas for the non-enlightened one, this effort and the habit we set up, for the enlightened one it's not a habit, it's his nature. It just sort of, yeah, it just sort of flows out. There are some lists that the enlightened person, the Arahant, is incapable of killing. Yeah? Incapable of stealing. Actually, incapable of doing the sexual act. Doesn't sound very attractive. He's incapable of lying. He just can't do it. Yeah. So when one says one lets go of ethical action, well, one lets go more of the habit of doing it, and it becomes one's nature rather than a practice. And interesting again, so this describes the enlightened one. The previous one describes the stream engine who can't fall back on the spiritual path but still needs some work. And this describes the Arahant who's fully enlightened. But again, to get there, is striving, effort, and so on. Now, these are actions. The next two bits talk about intentions. I had to do some sort of translating and research work now because it's getting really sort of subtle. The word intention is sankappa, Pali, those who like Pali studies, which we sometimes translate as emotion in the FWBO, but it's more intention and resolve. It's of mental direction, the direction where the mind takes. Yeah. So now we look at the workings of the mind. We're getting into quite subtle areas now. So again, the same formula. What is unwholesome intention? It's the intention of desire, of ill will, of cruelty. It's a standard Buddhist list of unwholesome intentions. Yeah. So it's when our mind goes towards cruelty, ill will, or desire. It's interesting that the Buddhist teachings distinguish between ill will and cruelty, because they're obviously strongly connected. Yeah? But cruelty is actually the joy of seeing somebody else suffering. It's a bit stronger than just ill will. Ill will is just you're annoyed with somebody. Yeah? You want to get them out of the way because you're annoyed with them. Yeah? Cruelty is sort of when you kick them when they're already lying on the floor, sort of thing. Yeah? And enjoy that. So this is evil intention. And now I have to guess, because my Pali isn't up to anything. Their cause. Where do these evil intentions come from? Everything has a cause. Nothing exists just out of nothing. Yeah? Nothing just sort of pops up. So evil intentions, our intention to be cruel, have ill will, our desire, our craving, has some source. The cause is perception. The word is sanya, which we sometimes refer to as thinking. Perception is the faculty of the mind to label, to interpret, it's to do with act of recognition. All that is sanya. So when you look at this thing here, your sense perception is just of shapes and colors. Sanya is what makes this into a flip chart. That's the mental faculty of sanya. Yeah. And the way we perceive isn't just bare and pure. It's already tinged. Yeah, it's already connected with, in a negative sense, desire, ill will, or cruelty. So when we're in a sort of bad mood, we look with sort of eyes of ill will. Yeah? When we're sort of not satisfied, we look with sort of greedy eyes. When we do this, greed gets strengthened. So it's quite a subtle way of the workings of the mind. Give a few examples of this. It might be useful just to flesh it out a bit more. Sometimes there's certain, usually with noises, we don't see the things. When we know what it is, we decide whether we like it or not. Some example. The classical example given with the scriptures in the crowd, and some little sort of bang on your back. Yeah? And you just don't know what it is. If some sort of stranger sort of stumbles into you, you don't like it. If it's a friend, you enjoy it, you like it. Yeah? So only this is sort of perception working. Yeah? Or here's a good example. If you're in a shrine room and somebody coughs, if it's somebody you like, you don't mind. If it's somebody you don't like, you get annoyed. The sound is the same. The sound is the same. Yeah? If it's somebody you're sort of a bit impatient with anyway, you get annoyed. Yeah? If it's somebody you like, and the poor chap is sort of ill, yeah? Then you feel compassion for him even. But it's the same sound. So that's your decision whether you like something or not, which is sangya. Yeah? And that determines whether you get into ill will or not. The cessation of unskillful evil intention is the first dhyana. It's in meditation. You know, the first of the four lower dhyanas. And to get there, to work on the cessation of unethical intention is the four right efforts again. It's the same text. It's again effort. It's necessary. Wholesome intention, the last one. Wholesome intention is intention of renunciation, non-ill will, and non-cruelty. So the opposite, obviously. The origin is the perception of renunciation, non-ill will, or non-cruelty. The cessation is the second dhyana. And again, this describes the enlightened one. And to get there, the four right efforts again. So this is the Buddha's examination of ethics, yeah, which is of course the real subtleties of the workings of the mind, especially when you talk about sangya, perception. Sangya is so fast, you don't notice it. But here's really a very subtle way of looking at it. Yeah. And it's described in a way of a path of how to gain enlightenment is by working on ethics. Yeah. Okay. After having gone through all this, the Buddha finally comes to these 10 qualities of the enlightened one. Finally are. They may look familiar to you. So what are these 10 qualities? Here, a bhikkhu, a practitioner, possesses the right view of one beyond training. One. Second, the right intention of one beyond training. Three, right speech of one beyond training. Four, the right action of one beyond training. Five, the right livelihood of one beyond training. Six, the right effort of one beyond training. Seven, the right mindfulness of one beyond training. And eight, the right concentration of one beyond training. Nine, the right knowledge of one beyond training. And ten, the right deliverance of one beyond training. The first eight are the Noble Eightfold Path, perfected. Yeah. Which is a very interesting way of looking at enlightenment. It's a path at its perfection. Yeah. The Eightfold Path perfected plus two more, which is a way of describing the enlightened one. The two ones which are not part of the Eightfold Path are right knowledge, described as the insight and knowledge of the enlightened one, and right deliverance, liberation from all defilement. Yeah. Of put on top of the Eightfold Path perfected. And the Noble Eightfold Path is usually spoken of in a sort of complete transformation of one's life. What the beauty of the Eightfold Path is, I mean, there's lots of it, it's eight. It's much more complicated to learn the Threefold Path, which is ethics, meditation, wisdom. It's more complicated, but it's completer. Yeah? It describes a complete transformation of one's being and one's life. Yeah, all aspects of one's life. From livelihood, how one earns one's living, one's speech, one's actions, one's views, one's meditations, one's practice of mindfulness, the whole lot. And here the goal is described in this complete transformation of every aspect of one's being. Yeah, so again, it's a much broader vision of the goal than just being a good person. It goes far beyond it. And this is sort of where the sutta ends. Yeah, with the description of the enlightened one as having these 10 qualities. Yeah, so just to point out what I thought was the most important part of the sutra for one's practice. The first point is the whole huge area of useless speech, an endless area by its nature, which might be interesting to have a look at, but embarrassing. If you ever discuss this, beware of excuses. Often when one discusses ethical issues, the first thing is the exceptions which one finds. Yeah. So I'm saying when you have a discussion on generosity, one of the first things that pop up in any discussion is reasons for not being generous. The first thing that pops up. Yeah. Also with useless speech, the first thing that will come up in any discussion on useless speech, reasons for doing it. Yeah. Beware of that tendency. Yeah. Yes, there are exceptions, but don't assume you are one. That's the best attitude, sort of thing. Yeah. It's best to be a bit more strict in case of doubt. There's a whole area of useless speech. And then the main point, really, the main part of the sutta is ethics is far, of course, much further than just avoiding wrong actions. Yeah? It goes far, much further than just of being a good person. Yeah? It's about understanding one's motivation. And I think the important point here is we can try to learn this theoretically, sort of abstractly. Yes, we know unethical actions have their root in greed, hatred, and delusion. Yeah? But it's a greed, hatred, and delusion in us. Well, it's us basically doing it. Yeah? So we think about our unethical actions, look at one's own greed, hatred, delusion. And it's about sort of understanding oneself, one's own motivation. Well, then the obvious one really is ethics is not just about avoiding unskillful, it's about doing the skillful. It's not just about being harmless. And I think one of the neglected teachings in the FWO, the four right efforts, the constant reminder of the four right efforts in the sutta. I think they're a bit of a neglected teaching, because they're great. I think they're a brilliant teaching. What they mean is, the one way of putting it is, there's always reason for making effort. No state is so bad that it's completely hopeless. Yeah? And no state is so good that can rest on one's laurels. Yeah? So it's always time for place for effort. I think it's a really brilliant teaching, one of the neglected teachings in the FWO, I think, in Buddhism. Because sometimes effort is seen as something evil or bad, but just what you have to do. Simple. And one never goes beyond ethics, that's another important point. One never leaves behind ethics. Yeah. So, assuming we are moving towards enlightenment, which is far off anyway, just assuming it is a practical problem for us, it's not about letting go of ethics at all. Yeah. It's more making it, letting go of ethics is more about making it one's nature. Yeah. Turning it from a practice into it being part of one's nature, one's being, basically. Yeah. So whereas this sort of unenlightened person, us, have to practice ethics and set up good habits, the word is actually habits, so interesting one. The enlightened one doesn't have to do any habits anymore, it's his nature. So we have to make ethics our nature. Yeah. That's the way of not clinging to ethical action. Yeah. Being unethical is not the right way of not clinging to ethics. It's the wrong way of doing it. And the final part of it, which I think is an important part again, the path and the goal consist in total transformation of every part of one's being. Yeah. And one can't, I think, one can't simplify the Dharma. It's a complex thing, and because we are complex. Yeah. And try to simplify it on, say, mindfulness or ethics, you'll forget most of it then. Yeah. So it's far too complex and consists in the whole transformation of one's whole being and one's whole life, basically. Okay, so much for the sutta. I think there's enough stuff for the discussions. Thank you.